There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not? We've bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Rees-Bonneau, and I'm your host on today's program. Canada makes some new rules about media ownership, and it looks like this is going to be the year when we're really facing up to what the internet's going to look like down here in the U.S. It's a news update. Gonna look at it all. Do stay tuned. While the FCC takes one step backward by nearly eliminating the cross-ownership ban here in the U.S., the Canadians Communications Regulator, the CRTC, is taking one step forward. On January 15th, the commission revealed a new regulation being called the 2-out-of-3 rule. Simply stated, the rule restricts a single company from owning more than two types of media properties in the same market. The media covered are newspapers, television stations, and radio stations. The new rule comes after a week-long series of public hearings on media ownership and diversity of voices conducted by the CRTC in September 2007. These hearings were brought on after a few major media mergers in Canada, including the formation of CTV Globe Media, which combined the CTV television network, the Globe and Mail newspaper, and radio TV broadcaster CHUM. The goal of the new rule is to prevent a future merger resulting in any single company from controlling more than 45% of a total local audience share. The CRTC will also prohibit mergers between distribution companies like satellite networks and broadcast outlets that would result in one company effectively controlling delivery of all programming in a given market. In a written statement, the CRTC said, quote, "The trend towards greater consolidation in the broadcasting industry has raised concerns that a large ownership group could achieve a dominant position through acquisitions, which could bring about a reduction in the diversity of local, regional, and national content," end quote. While the CRTC's move to restrict consolidation might sound pretty good to us in the States, Canada's major media unions are less sanguine. In a statement, the vice president of the Communications, Energy, and Paperworkers Union said, quote, "The commission has taken the smallest step possible to limit local media concentration, while allowing, in some areas, increased concentration. The new policy does nothing about media empires that currently have a stranglehold on some large markets, such as Vancouver, or about what happens on a national level," end quote. The president of the Canadian Media Guild said, quote, "The CRTC is preserving the current unacceptable levels of concentration and is not even adopting meaningful measures to stop it from getting worse," end quote. Back in Washington, the FCC held a public State of the FCC meeting on January 17th, where several major issues were brought up by the commissioners. Democrat Michael Copps, the likely next chairman if a Democrat wins the presidency this year, raised concerns over the acquisition of media companies by private equity firms. Just the week before, the FCC approved one doozy of such a deal, the $19.5 billion buyout of radio megacaster Clear Channel by Thomas H. Lee Partners and Bain Capital Partners. Of course, these private equity firms are not publicly traded and are therefore much less publicly accountable than companies like Clear Channel, minimally publicly accountable, one might say, which was publicly traded. Cops' concern is that these media companies will be broken up or shut down in a way that could threaten local service. He also expressed caution over the opaque ownership structure of these private equity firms, which could leave the FCC facing difficulty in taking action against regulated companies. The commission's other Democrat, Jonathan Adelstein, took aim at video news releases during the State of the FCC meeting, saying that dealing with them should be among the commission's priorities. Video news releases are television segments created by advertising or public relations firms and are offered for free to television stations to be aired as if they were news. Last year, the FCC began to investigate complaints about VNRs and issued a few proposed fines to stations that aired them without attributing their source. Adelstein noted that there is what he called a large raft of complaints that the FCC has yet to attend to. So that's a little bit of what's going on with the FCC. But the big thing I wanted to talk about on today's show is the future of the internet, which is something, you know, I've tackled a number of times. Of course, it's an ongoing thing. I think it's very important to a show like Media Geek, which often focuses on independent and alternative media, because the internet has been really, frankly speaking, a boon to independent and alternative media, despite the fact that we have seen consolidation take hold and many of the great media powers of the previous decade of the 90s in television and radio and other areas also take hold as big powers on the internet, while, of course, newer companies have come into the fold and take prominence as well. Nevertheless, a show like Media Geek could not exist without the internet. It would be impossible for me to distribute the show to the dozen or so stations that also air it, and I wouldn't have nearly as many listeners outside of the Champaign-Urbana area because a lot of people are listening online. So I think it is very important that we continue to keep a very vigilant watch on our ability to use the internet freely, especially via the people who provide that service, which is overwhelmingly big telecommunications companies like AT&T or Verizon, or via the nation's largest cable companies like Comcast or Time Warner. And so in just the last few months, we've heard quite a few concerns about Comcast, and there's all sorts of new news about AT&T. Now, first off, something I've been covering quite a bit has been allegations that Comcast has been interfering with peer-to-peer traffic originating on its customers' computers. The traffic in particular question comes from BitTorrent, which is one of the most popular ways of sharing files on the internet. BitTorrent is especially popular because it can be used to serve to share almost any kind of file, and is a great way to mitigate the bandwidth requirements for sharing free software or other types of media that indeed people intend to share. If you were to write a very large open source application, the bandwidth bills to provide it and allow people to download it, if it were megabytes and or hundreds of megabytes or gigabytes in size, could bankrupt you. BitTorrent allows that bandwidth load to be spread out amongst multiple hosts, amongst multiple peering computers, where everyone contributes a little bit so it doesn't cost anyone so much. Of course, like other peer-to-peer technologies, like any technology, there are people who also use it to share copyrighted materials that they don't have the permission to share. But BitTorrent probably stands up at the front as a particular technology which is used for many, many legitimate purposes. The AP last year found that Comcast is indeed blocking BitTorrent traffic, is actually interfering with it more than it is blocking. And in fact, what it does is it spoofs other peer-to-peer computers, other BitTorrent peers, into thinking that its customers' computers are not responding. So in fact, it poses as its customers' computers on the internet and tells other BitTorrent peers, sorry, not responding, dragging everything down and making it all not work. So the FCC, as I reported last week, has said that it is actually investigating now Comcast's practice of interfering with BitTorrent traffic to see whether or not this something violates FCC standards, or whether it is actually okay under provisions for managing traffic. This is being done by the FCC's Enforcement Bureau. But in addition, on January 14th, the commission released a public notice seeking comment on a petition for declaratory ruling filed by Free Press and other reform groups. And the question at hand with that particular petition is if the practice by broadband service providers of degrading peer-to-peer traffic violates the FCC's internet policy statement, and that such practices do not meet the commission's expectation for reasonable network management. So the FCC is accepting public comment on this. And what that should mean is that once the public comment comes forward and reply comments come through, then the commissioners will take a look at this particular issue and come forward to make a declaratory ruling and say, yes, this is permissible for broadband service providers to degrade peer-to-peer traffic, or to say that it is not permissible. It's an up or down ruling, but it doesn't necessarily lead to a fine of any kind, although the Enforcement Bureau's investigation can. But the resulting decision couldn't determine what practices are acceptable or prohibited. And then just within days of the FCC opening this proceeding, there are dozens of Comcast customers who have filed comments to the FCC. Matthew Lazar runs a great weblog called Lazar's Letter on the FCC, which is llfcc.net. And he's already quoting a bunch of them, like one Comcast customer who writes, quote, "If you so much as open a BitTorrent client on a computer on the Comcast network, your entire connection drops to almost a crawl. Comcast is throttling my connection speed when I am transferring files from work to home. They're also interrupting my connections." Another commenter writes, quote, "Comcast is one of only two broadband internet choices I have where I live. I chose Comcast because of supposed advertised bandwidth speeds and a good promotional price, which is no longer valid," end quote. And there's also a separate public notice where the FCC is seeking comments on a petition filed by VUZE, V-U-Z-E, Incorporated, requesting the commission to initiate a rulemaking procedure to indeed clarify what constitutes reasonable network management by network operators. And public comment on both proceedings are due February 13th. And I do have a post up at the Media Geek website right now where you can go look at more of these comments filed, as on Matthew Lazar's blog. I've also linking to a post made by Harold Feld. He is a lawyer and a very, very keen observer of the FCC and the media regulatory process. He's with the Media Access Project, and he dives a little more into what all this might mean, the FCC's investigation, and also takes a look at the role of Chairman Kevin Martin in all this. One of the reasons for all the Martin watching is because he's been very, very critical of the cable industry as of late, pushing for there to be more regulation of cable rather than less, and indeed pushing for the recent cap that the FCC has leveled on the cable industry, making sure that no particular cable operator can reach more than 35% of the national audience. While he seems to have gone pretty soft on other telecommunications providers like Verizon or AT&T, and on the media industry, as evidenced with the recent decision in December to all but do away with the cross-ownership rule. So Harold Feld tries to draw it out and tries to lend some logic to what some people think is not such a consistent pattern of operation by Chairman Martin. So it's good reading if you're into such sort of things. You go to MediaGeek website at MediaGeek.net to get more of that. But what's interesting here is that, you know, as one commenter on the Comcast inquiry said, you know, Comcast is only one of two broadband internet choices. Well, another one someone might have is AT&T. Often if someone has two choices, it's usually a cable modem provider or a DSL provider, and AT&T is the largest provider of internet services over phone lines, over digital DSL lines, and it's now testing technology to filter traffic on its own network, apparently looking for illegally distributed copyright materials. So, on the one hand, you have a Comcast, which is blocking all peer-to-peer traffic through BitTorrent, whether or not it happens to be copyrighted. And now we have word that AT&T is testing technology to sniff for things that might be copyrighted, so in order to filter it. And of course, the big question is, Well, how does AT&T know if something is copyrighted material or not? Or shall we say, how does it know that it's copyrighted material which is not being distributed legally or with permission of the copyright owners? I start to worry that, you know, because I distribute a half-hour radio show on the internet, which I own the copyright on, but I distribute it freely, that that could be picked up for some reason and be sniffed out as copyrighted and not make it to its destination. And it's also kind of weird because as Columbia University law professor Tim Wu has observed, he says, I can't see why filtering traffic would be of interest to AT&T because the company spent 6 years and millions of dollars lobbying for laws so they wouldn't have to filter for copyrighted material on their network, and now they want to do it, end quote. And that's true. In a Digital Millennium Copyright Act, network providers are absolved from liability for the distribution of copyright material or without permission on their networks, provided that they're not otherwise filtering for it. So it says, basically, if you provide a network service like internet service to someone's home, and they can do pretty much whatever they want with it if you don't know it, and the company bears no liability. But once you start to filter, you actually do bear liability. So it seems they're just buying themselves a whole mess of trouble. Some commentators are wondering if AT&T isn't doing this because they're hoping to make a lot of money providing television services over internet, and that maybe a lot of content providers are still a little nervous and are looking for greater guarantees from AT&T that copyrighted materials are not being shared across its network. But anyway, that's something which I think should raise concerns to anyone who distributes or uses content on the internet, whether or not it's something engaging in some sort of piracy or just working with materials which are freely available. Filters aren't that smart, I think, is what we've learned. And they're not going to be so smart about whether or not the content you want to get or the content you want to distribute is something which you have every right to do. But then another company, Time Warner, the number two cable company in the country, is looking to test new usage billing for the internet. Looking at the Beaumont, Texas market, they're going to start charging for the amount that someone uses rather than a flat rate. And that poses a tremendous change to how the internet has worked for most people so far, especially in broadband. For most people, you pay a monthly fee, a flat rate that gives you a connection to the internet. And usually your connection has a speed associated with it. It may be you'll be told you get 1.5 or 3 megabits of bandwidth to receive, and you might be able to send anywhere from 128 kilobits on up of traffic. So you can send usually less than you can receive, which is a problem in and of itself, but usually you pay to have this constant connection. And, you know, you probably don't use it all most of the time. And in fact, AT&T says that their top 5% of bandwidth users use more than 50% of available bandwidth, because keeping up, you know, that sort of bandwidth use would probably take a lot of time and energy. And for most people, you know, you're not on the internet all the time, or even if you are, you may be reading, you may be doing a various number of things. You're probably not soaking up that much bandwidth. So AT&T says that they want to now, Time Warner, they say they now want to charge people more who are using more bandwidth. I wonder, though, does that mean that if you use barely any bandwidth at all, if you have broadband but you mostly do text sites and email, if you're going to be able to see your bill go down? Something about that sounds like it won't really happen to me. But it's a funny news to happen the same week where Apple has introduced its online movie rental service and introduces its new MacBook Air computer, which is a very light laptop computer that has no optical drives, no DVD drive, no CD drive. And one of the reasons that Apple says it doesn't is because, hey, you can download your movies from us over the internet. There's no need to have all that pesky physical media. It's all on the internet now. Except unless you're a Time Warner customer in Beaumont, Texas, where downloading these gigabyte files may really send your bandwidth bills through the roof. So, you know, you pay less maybe in one way, only to pay more from your broadband company. And it's all looking like there's a lot of balls up here in the air for what's going to happen with the last mile of the internet, which is one of the most important ones since it's how most of us connect to it, as to what types of traffic we'll be able to do, whether or not we'll be able to use something like peer-to-peer services, which are supposed to actually save a bunch on bandwidth usage, whether it's going to cost us more now on top of our monthly fees to download movies or music legally from sources where we've bought it or rented it and hoping it won't get filtered out on its way, even if we've bought it or rented it. To me, this is a rather scary set of circumstances that we might be facing, all while we still have the question of net neutrality sitting in Congress without much action yet and hanging out at the FCC. What this all adds up to, though, and the thing that we should all be concerned about, is that it's very possible that when it comes to renting movies from Apple or when it comes to purchasing other content from large media companies, be it Amazon or be it from Time Warner, that that's all going to get fixed. Because the likes of AT&T, the likes of Time Warner Cable, the likes of Comcast will be able to sit down and work out contracts with these largest of providers so that the bandwidth is taken care of. So as a customer on a Comcast or Time Warner, you may not pay for that extra bandwidth from the Apple Music Store or the Apple movie rental thing, but you may indeed still pay for it when you go to the MediaGeek website and you try to download the radio program. And that's the world I think that we want to be a little frightened about, because that's really where you start to see a two-tiered internet. And this is a thing which advocates for network neutrality have been talking about and been sounding the alarms about. And I think here we're already starting to see them laying the foundation and groundwork for it. And not doing it in the most straightforward of ways, but hitting it from a lot of different angles. With specific regard to BitTorrent, as I mentioned on the show last year, I was at a conference in November where someone from BitTorrent was speaking as a keynote address, because BitTorrent offers its peer-to-peer service also to commercial customers. And so they've got their own particular product for distributing streaming video or downloaded video for commercial purposes. And so someone asked the inevitable question, well, what are you going to do about Comcast? Aren't they going to be blocking your traffic? And the answer was, well, the commercial client that might be used by a media company like CNN or some other client is different, uses a different protocol than the open source client that other nonprofit users would use. And we're basically making deals with broadband companies. So it will be a pay for play option in that way. So if you want to use BitTorrent DNA to get something from a commercial, from a large media company, no problems. If you want to use it to get something like open source software that might be available on the internet, there you may indeed have problems. That is the two-tiered internet. And certainly you can say, well, you know, you ought to pay for the bandwidth you use. You ought to pay for your connection. And I think that's absolutely fair. That's absolutely fair to have to pay for it. However, I pay for 3 megabits of connection. I ought to get 3 megabits of connection. And maybe making it explicit that if you get more traffic, then you pay more, then the rates ought to be reasonable. And if you use less traffic, you ought to pay less. Certainly moving to a usage, to a metered sort of usage like electricity or like a cell phone might be reasonable. I'd have to see the details before I was willing to put an opinion about that. But then it would be awfully fair then that you have a great deal of control over the types and traffic you receive. I don't know about you, but I think most people who get broadband service often get a whole suite of other little applications that come with it. It might give you the weather, or might bring you to a particular website as your homepage that casts you news headlines. It may do all sorts of other things that are just sort of default when you get the broadband service installed. That's all using bandwidth. And so if that's going to happen and you're getting charged for your bandwidth specifically, and there's all this stuff you aren't really requesting, it just kind of gets casted to you, but you're paying for it. Well, you know, to me, that's a problem. It'd be like getting a torrent of text messages, which you have not subscribed to, which you pay, you know, 25 cents each or something like that. You know, you ought to be able to really greatly control the traffic you get if you're going to be paying for it on a per megabyte, per gigabyte basis. These are the issues facing us, and I think we're going to be paying a lot of attention to what happens in the internet service market this year, because I think it will directly impact our ability to communicate, our ability to share information, and our ability to publish, our ability to podcast, our ability to blog, our ability to engage in chat, whether it's over Skype or some other sort of online audio, video chatting service. All these things will be hanging in the balance under the control of these large companies like Time Warner, AT&T, and Comcast. And so it's good that our regulators like the FCC be looking into them. I also hope Congress will be looking into it more, and hope we'll be seeing some real movement in making network neutrality again the law of the land. This is my opinion. You may think differently, and of course, if you do, I'd be glad to hear from you. You can always send me email to paul@mediageek.net. Also, I try to cover all these things at the MediaGeek website at www.mediageek.net. Coming up in future shows, I hope that we'll be looking into a little bit of public broadcasting. Critique of that is coming up on the next show with my friend and a former chairman of the WEFT Board of Directors, home station Media Geek, Bill Portman, who has worked in public media, has worked in public radio, and no longer does. And he's got his own critique and observations about both the benefits and the problems of public broadcasting, and he'll be glad to share that with us. It'll be on the next program of Media Geek coming up in just 1 week. This brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm host and producer Paul Riesmandel. I'll be back in 1 week with more news and views in our media environment. In the meantime, check out the Media Geek blog at MediaGeek.net. You can listen to and download the program at radio.mediageek.net, where you can also subscribe to the podcast. If you have any comments about the program, I'd love to read them. Send them to paul@mediageek.net. Media Geek is produced at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois, and also is heard on 12 other community stations across North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WTND in Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, KWMD in Kosilov in Anchorage, Alaska, Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington, WVEW in Brattleboro, Vermont, CHMA in Sackville, New Brunswick, WBCR in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina. The Media Geek Radio Show is available for free to any non-commercial community station. Just send email to paul@mediageek.net. Thanks for tuning in.
Yar yar mein na chungi.